Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century.
Join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
Good day, listener. This is Matt Tebbe. You're listening to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. We did a recording a few weeks ago about five traits of toxic leadership and received an incredible amount of feedback and responses and reflections from you all. And we had intended for it to be a one-off episode, but because of the thoughtfulness and tenderness of what you shared, we decided to do a follow-up episode. Mm-hmm. So Ben and Christy are joining me today, and we are going to do a few things. One, I think reflect on some of the things that you all said, some of the things that struck us and stood out to us. And then two, I think it is prudent for us to maybe name, we kind of did this in the first episode, but maybe more pointedly, be more blatant about it. Name, you know, five signs of a healthy leadership culture.
Yeah. Some of the, how, like naming the, not necessarily the opposite, but sort of the opposite, like, or the antidote maybe to some of the sign, the toxic culture signs that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah. So it was an outpouring, I guess you could say, for us, of responses from y'all, and a lot of people sharing stories where they felt like the five signs that we talked about and the dynamics we named, that they experienced them personally. I guess, Ben and Christy, for y'all, when you read these emails we got, what stood out to you?
Man, a lot. it's hard to narrow it down for me because we did, I mean, for us, this did get probably more responses than we've ever gotten to any single podcast episode. And so one of the things that struck me was just a feeling of heartbreak that something like an episode called Five Signs of Toxic Leadership would resonate so much with people. Yeah. Like I was just heartbroken that this is so common, especially in the Christian world. Like a lot of people talked about encountering, just like we did, these toxic leadership, facets of a toxic leadership culture in the church or in Christian ministries of one kind or another. And, I don't know, it just is so heartbreaking to me that, that this is so common, especially in the church.
Yeah.
It actually made me think, like, I wish I would have shared some happy stories of growth and health that I am experiencing, because I think our listeners need to hear those stories too. So can I share two quick happy stories?
Yes, do it.
I don't know.
Sure.
Happy, I don't know if happy is the right word. I feel like healthy stories is probably the right word, which makes my heart happy. But I, in past jobs, I've been in environments where I was the only female preacher on a preaching team. And when I was a part of that group, I had to give my sermon to other people on the preaching team, and then they could critique me and tell me the things I needed to change before I actually preached it on Sunday morning.
Wait, Chrissy. So you had to basically audition your sermon for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and then they gave you feedback that you then incorporated into your message?
You know, the good girl in me, I hear you. I believe their hearts did not realize what they were doing, because I was the only one that had to do that in this group. The other men didn't have to do that, right?
Yeah.
But when I came into a healthy environment, I was, first of all, not the only woman on the preaching team, which is a beautiful thing. But at the first meeting I was at the end of the meeting, I said, okay, you know, now we have the schedules and we've got it all planned out and this is what we're going to do. And in this group, we all share our sermons and our ideas and our illustrations, and we dialogue about it a month before, not the week before, a month before. So there can actually be voice into it, which I think is healthy. But two, I said to my boss, okay, do I need to preach this to you like on Thursday or something before the Sunday I'm going to preach? And my boss looked at me and he said, Christy, you don't have to preach this to me because you're a woman, and you don't have to preach this to me because you're new. And I just cried, just tears of like, I did not realize what I was holding, that had been my culture. And to see a new way of being a part of a team, to see a new way of someone treating me, brought real freedom and real joy and real healing. And so I thought, as I heard these emails and these stories from our listeners, I thought, man, we need to hear and celebrate, remember and celebrate these new stories of health, that it doesn't have to be like the toxic culture that we talked about. There is a possibility of it being healthy.
Yeah. That's really great, Christy. I appreciate you sharing that story. I think that can be helpful because of one of the other things that stood out to me in these emails that we got is just how much it costs people to leave these cultures. And so, you know, you would think, I don't know, you would think, oh, wow, this is toxic. I'm going to get out, you know, and that would be like a no-brainer. But I'm struck in these responses by how difficult it is for people to see the toxicity and to leave it, because they're losing a lot. This isn't just, you know, like, man, I ate some bad yogurt. I'm going to avoid that brand from now on. Like, the choices that people have to make here are leaving relationships, leaving just their sense of identity of who they are, long-standing belonging in a church environment, you know, where, you know, it wasn't all bad. You know what I mean? Like there's love in those environments, and there's belonging in those environments. And for people to make the decision to say, this is not good for me, and it's actually not good for the people who are hurting me. It's actually not good for us to be in this kind of relationship where this is the norm. For them to disrupt that and to leave that, it costs people tremendously. And so that was another thing that I was struck by, that it was just like, it's so difficult to see, notice, name, and leave these places. It's really hard.
Yeah, it actually made me want each of these writers to sit across the table from me and for us to cry together, for me to hear their story in full, for me to like, to kind of catch their tears in a way of, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Two things.
What struck you, Matt?
Yeah. Two things stand out to me, Christy, about what you said. The first is how we don't know the cost of these abusive or toxic cultures until somebody names them. And the pastor, we kind of named them last week, but the pastor went beyond naming it and like proclaimed good news to you. Yeah. Right. So it wasn't just naming the bad news, but was declaring good news, and your body just released all the things it was holding. Cathartic, really, right? Cathartic. So I noticed that. And the second thing I notice is, and this is kind of moving into this five signs of a healthy leadership culture. So maybe we'll just toggle back and forth as we go. But the first sign is that, remember we talked about in an unhealthy culture, the power flows up and in and is consolidated, right? Rather than down and out. And when power flows up and in and is consolidated, the people at the top are the gatekeepers. They have to, they get to be essentially the police, right? So then, yes, you can preach, Christy, but we're going to police what you say. And if you don't do it the way we want you to do it, we won't let you do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's responsibility, right? You have to preach this Sunday, but we retain the authority, right? Mm-hmm. And in a healthy leadership culture, you go from a kind of gatekeeping and policing to collaborating and empowering. So instead of me holding the authority and giving you responsibility and you have to perform in such a way that then I let you do the responsibility. Healthy leadership cultures confer authority like Jesus, right? Yeah. And they don't do that in an irresponsible way. So it may be irresponsible for a pastor who just hires you, who's never heard you preach, say, yeah, go ahead, preach. I don't care what you say, whatever. Right. It may go great. It may not. But we do something similar at our church where we call people in, and these are people who haven't preached as much as you have, Christy. We call people into a kind of a cohort, collaborative cohort, where sermons are worked on together. And there's collaboration and there's generative conversation. And then when these people get up to preach, most of them are women this year in our College of Preachers, we call it. It really is the community had shaped the message, and they feel more comfortable and secure in what they're saying. But also too, like, I feel like we've done our responsibility as leaders to not just throw them to the wolves, so to speak, but really prepare them and equip them. So that's the first big difference. And then I'd love to hear if I'm naming this in a way that comports to your experience, Christy, is instead of when power flows up and in, it's gatekeepers and there's police, there's withholding of authority and giving of responsibility. But in a healthy leadership culture, the power flows down and out. So you actually confer authority with the responsibility, but it's a responsible giving of authority so that there's a collaborative, generative community around people so that they don't fall flat on their face or they don't do things that, you know, can hurt other people as much, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would add is at former places where I've worked, I think the heartbeat, the reason they told me they were doing this was for it to be collaborative, except for that it actually wasn't collaborative. Right.
Yeah.
And so now where I'm at, it is a month before I'm preaching, I have my sermon written and I am listening to what people are, you know, hey, have you thought about this? Or what do you think about this? Or, you know, whatever. And it's actually very, very helpful rather than like fear-based. Like, what am I going to do wrong this time? What do I have to fix the Friday night before the Sunday that I got to preach it? And, you know, what, I don't know. And so, I just see the real benefit of team being played out now in my life, which is really fun and beautiful and good. And I think the way it should be.
Yeah, I think we could probably do a whole series on what this means, because I think one of the mistakes that people make if they've been hurt in a like a power flows up and in kind of culture where you know, authority is hoarded and sort of kept from people, one of the mistakes we make is we try to pretend that nobody has authority. We try to pretend that, hey, we're all just kind of doing this together. Right. And come on, everybody contributes and we're all just going to do it together. But if that's not conferring authority. To confer authority, you have to own that you have to own it, that you have it actually. Yeah. Right. And so I think that can be a challenge sometimes for people who've been hurt by authority. You know, if they come into an experience where they have authority, it can actually be a crucible for some people to say, you know what, I have to, for me to responsibly confer authority, I have to own that I have it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the irony is you can actually end up hurting people by pretending that you don't have authority when you actually do have it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's been super helpful for us. And we do, we just have to own it. Like, you know, Matt and I planted this church and we've got a third co-pastor now. We carry more authority than anybody else in that church, just by virtue of our position there. And we have to own that if we're not going to sort of abuse it, either intentionally, or you can actually accidentally or sort of inadvertently end up hurting people by pretending you don't have authority.
Yeah. And there's age at work here too. We co-pastor with another guy, but he's what, 10 years younger than us, almost 15.
Uh-huh.
And so I think people script onto us a greater status or honor. And then I have a mustache, so everybody automatically thinks I'm in charge.
That kind of has a dual effect. I think some people are like, wow, that guy's super impressive. Mm-hmm. I think there's like maybe one or two people. Mm-hmm. And then I think probably 98% of the people are like, what's that guy doing? He's not a real pastor.
Let's pull the people. The numbers may be different.
And now, a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
All right, let's move on to number two here. We talked about the toxic culture, leadership culture has a reality distortion field where you're being gaslit, or there's a story kind of like you just shared, Christy, like this previous church you worked at, the people who were gatekeeping and policing actually thought they were collaborating. They probably weren't intentionally lying to you. They probably were telling themselves, this is what I'm doing. But
absolutely.
Right? That's not what they were doing. Your body felt that and knew that, so that when you're in a new place and somebody proclaims the good news of what the newness is, your body's like, thank you. Right?
It's like a surprise party every day here.
That's so good.
It's unbelievable.
I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful for that. Mm-hmm. So reality distortion to, want to name this as that reality is complicated. Mm. So one of the things about reality distortion is that a few people get to tell the story about what's happening. There's an official story, and whatever their story is, we run with, right? And I think that what I've learned in leadership is I have convictions about the story, right? For instance, we just left our denomination, and one of these days we're going to launch the Gravity Commons, and Ben and I are going to tell some of that story, I think, for our Commons listeners. But I had a story that I was telling myself about why we were leaving and how we were leading our leaving. But other people, because of their own stories, their own perspectives, their experiences, some of them had trauma going on, they told themselves a different story. For them, their reality of how they experienced our leaving the church did not line up with the story I was telling. And I, as a leader, had a choice. I could argue with them, you're wrong, which we all know they would experience as gaslighting, right? Or, and this is what I'm learning to do, is to just say, yeah, reality is complicated, and leaving our denomination can feel like this to me, but it can feel totally different to you. And and maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
Which is a huge sign of maturity, Matt. I mean, I don't think that most people tell stories that way or are open to saying what you're experiencing can be kind of true for you and that's real for you. And then, but the story that's I'm experiencing myself is different. And so it is complicated. And sometimes we say that and then we're like, wait, no, it's got to be the same. But we're different people.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, like I got there. But at first I was like, hey, X, Y, and Z are why we're leaving. And people gave feedback of like, well, I don't see X, Y, and Z. And my first impulse is, well, let me explain it to you. Let me help you see it. You know, let me give you the evidence. And then the data or the evidence or the stories that are persuasive or influential to me aren't for them.
Yeah. It doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't compute. No. It doesn't add up. Maybe they have contra data that I don't have that seems inconsequential to me, but very consequential to them. So it was fear and trembling. It was a lot of wrestling for me to get to a place where I just had to say, bless you.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we can talk more about it, you know, in the commons when we get that launched again, but,
be on the lookout, 2027, the potential launch for that.
No, come on now. Come on.
I'm joking. It's going to be this year.
I know you are.
This year.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Naming it.
Anyway, I recognize that as well as, that was part of the crucible, for me in that process was learning to not argue with people about sort of things that they were not asking questions about. You know, I mean, there were some people. So it's interesting because you have to kind of read this. You have to interpret where people are coming from, because there were some people who had genuine questions. They were surprised by the move and they had genuine questions and were like, well, this was my impression of things. And can you talk to me more about this? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, sure. Well, let me talk to you more about this. And we can sort of offer evidence and all of that kind of thing. But there was a different posture sometimes, that gets manifested where it's like, this is a non-starter for me for these reasons. And I think it's wisdom and it's love, at that point to not try to argue them into seeing things your way, but just to say, you know what, I get why this feels impossible to you. And I'm sorry that, you know, that we're at this place
at this impasse.
It appears we cannot walk together anymore in the way that we have. And that's sad, but real. Maybe just one last thing that I would say, in relationship to this is that it did like you said, Matt, it was fear and trembling to be able to enter into this because it did take some, there was like it felt like a death. For me to sort of not argue what I felt like was a good perspective and a laudable, you know, way of seeing things. And so I think that's, you know, these, a healthier leadership culture doesn't come about by, you know, accident. I think, it comes about by sort of these kinds of things, just like walking forward in fear and trembling and trying to make a good decision and trusting Jesus, that when things aren't going the way that you want them to go or as smoothly as you hoped they would go, it's difficult.
Well, and you said it's like a death. It is. Like toxic leadership, when people are walking away from their communities and their churches and friends, it's a death. And it doesn't just end overnight. And I think we heard some of that in these emails and in responses of, this is a process of people really grieving. And so maybe they just need to hear they're not alone in that. They're not the only one grieving in this. Yeah.
So a few artifacts I've learned to help move from, as a leader, trying to control the narrative to living as though reality is complicated. And that is fight hard to listen to what people are saying and reflect it back without arguing or changing it or judging it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Two, learn to say things like, I appreciate that is your conviction. I think we disagree on this. And let it go. And let it go. Like, and that's, I think we aren't comfortable enough about holding disagreement. We feel like we have to fix it or manage it or solve it. And sometimes, sometimes Paul and Barnabas have to split up. You know, and this is 20,000 feet. When we get into the weeds, there are certain things that I just won't disagree with you about. I won't tolerate this kind of disagreement, right? But there are countless things that I will hold disagreement with people about. And learning how to let that go, learning that I don't get to control that. Right now, we use a plate for communion, and the light from the ceiling flashes off my eyes, blinds me. I'm almost falling down. But I just count it. I just store in my body what's lacking in the cross of Christ.
Paul got knocked off his horse by the presence of Jesus. But Matt, every time he tries to serve communion, gets knocked down by the just the stage.
Reality's complicated. I don't get to choose the plate. All right. All right. All right. Number three. Okay. So, distributing power, conferring authority. Number two, holding that reality is complicated and learning to appreciate and hold space for disagreement without needing to control mm-hmm. or manage or mm-hmm. solve it. Number three, we talked about an unhealthy leadership, toxic leadership was a loyalty culture, right? Where everybody had to show deference to and support of either the brand or the head honcho. And to break sort of ranks was to become a heretic. You know, you became the person who's the problem, your runoff, et cetera. And I want to, I'm having trouble naming this, but I think the antidote or the other side of the coin that leads to a healthy leadership culture mm-hmm. is not a loyalty culture, but a love culture. That honor isn't placed on a person, and you have to show fealty or make oblation to that person, but rather honor is given to the virtuous. And so we learn how to, like Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians, we learn how to give honor to every part of the body. See, I think this is part of the 1 Corinthians context that is so helpful for like a celebrity culture, toxic leadership culture today. There's so much evidence that 1 Corinthians, people wanted a hero. They wanted a mega church pastor. They wanted a celebrity preacher in 1 Corinthians. And Paul writes the entire letter basically to be like, no, you don't. No, you don't. And so part of him saying that is like, learn how to give honor to the lesser parts, right? And I think that I'm naming that as a love culture that we take, and that's where Paul ends his basically apologetic for how to, the antidote for this celebrity culture that you want in Corinth is 1 Corinthians 13, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the third thing. Moving from a loyalty culture to a love culture.
Yeah, I like that. There's a lot to reflect on there that feels difficult for me to articulate right now as well, because I think there's this feels like we don't honor one another. Like virtue is honored rather than position is honored, and I think that we learn to honor one another. And I think there's something to be learned here about, again, like what place does varying levels of authority have in a culture where we're learning to honor one another? And so I think there's something to learn there that biblical and important, but it's obviously the loyalty culture that we talked about in the first episode, the toxic leadership culture episode. That is a distortion of, the honor that we are to be giving one another. I think that's a good, it's alliterated. So it's at least it's got that going for you, Matt. Love culture.
Thanks.
It's not just a loyalty culture. So it's at least that. Christy, you got any reflections on this?
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, in our Gravity kind of community, we talk about love being full of grace and full of truth.
Yeah.
And I think in the loyalty culture, it's just full of grace. At least the people who are under the leader, right? They just give lots and lots of grace, and there really isn't a space to ask compassionate, curious questions and get real, honest answers, right? There isn't the truth aspect to it.
Like the only thing you're allowed to give to the leader, the person at the top, is affirmation and agreement. Is that kind of what you're saying? Okay. Yeah.
And almost like, I mean, we just talked about disagreement, but almost like disagreement equals disconnection. So if you agree, then you're connected to the leader, I agree. I think just defining love as full of grace and full of truth together, calibrating both together in that culture of love.
Yeah, I think if we learn to honor, Paul does a lot of work to honor the weaker vessel, or honor the weaker part, or honor the weak person, the person of weak conscience, right? in Romans even. I think that we can create a culture where it's allergic to somebody holding themselves up as the strong man, mm-hmm. you know, becoming the mouthpiece, right? The brand rep. Like, I think it's, we have to actually build a culture that's allergic to that. So if somebody tries to pull that, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, like, yeah. Like this, like it, nobody responds to it.
So
yeah,
like that, if I could, yeah. I can I tell a story about this? We had a friend bring somebody to our church, and I forget the guy's name. Let's just call him Bob. Bob was a retired pastor. And I met Bob after church. I said, "Hey, Bob, I'm Father Matt." He said, "I'm Bob. I have spent time with Henry Nouwen." And he went, and that was like the first words out of his mouth. And then he went on to like basically tell me where he graduated from all these prestigious schools, and he'd spent time studying and writing with all these prestigious people. And I remember thinking as he's talking, oh man, like so many church spaces reward this. And so many, like this guy came by this honestly, like this is how you, this is how you demonstrate utility or worth so that people accept you and want you to be a part of who they are. Right. And I remember thinking, okay, don't laugh. Like this is a pastorally sensitive situation. But also I wanted to just give him something different, rather than me being impressed or me mocking him, just saying, thanks for sharing that, Bob.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And why don't you hang out with us for a little bit and see if you like this place and want to belong here?
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to let you teach a class next Sunday, probably. that you know, that's a good example. I mean, it's an extreme example. I remember that as well. That guy gave me his CV the first Sunday he visited.
That's like the resume. That's like a resume, a religious resume. Like,
curriculum vitae. So anyway, so it was like, you know, clearly, so it's an extreme example of it, but it also, I think, is an interesting, also like holding authority well in that regard means, yeah, you don't let that guy teach a Sunday school class, right? Like that's not going to be good for this community or for him. And so there's a way of kind of holding authority, I think, in a way that helps everybody in situations like that.
But you know, from the leader perspective, name dropping can just die. People can just stop name dropping. Like when people do that, it's just silly.
You guys, I have done it.
Oh, so have I.
And as the words are coming out of my mouth, I feel so gross. Gosh.
Put them back in.
Yes.
Toothpaste is out of the tube.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I actually confessed that to Tom Wright last time we were together, and he had some really encouraging words for me.
it's stuff I really can't share.
Yeah, he told me not to repeat it. So, yeah. I mean, no, like doing that kind of stuff is just so gross. All right.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save big.
Let's get back to the show. All right, distributing power, not gatekeeping, but collaborating, number one. Number two, reality's complicated. So really listen to people, don't control the narrative, and name disagreement where it exists. And then I think, too, this necessitates getting clear on what can we disagree about and what can we not.
Yeah.
And even that, you don't have to agree with me on that. But but also, this is my conviction and this is what this means for us. Right?
Yeah.
You don't have to agree with me, but this is my conviction and this is what it means for me in this relationship. Number three, we're moving from a loyalty culture to a love culture. as we just shared. And number four, remember we talked about toxic leadership environments where leaders are unable to have a kairos, right? Nice. They have a thought and that's it, and they run with it. And then if you try to bring something to them that contradicts how they're acting or their self-awareness, there's no self-awareness, right? They just kind of lose it. Mm-hmm. To create a healthy leadership culture, we need to develop a culture that celebrates and honors learning. Mm. So going from an expert culture to a student or learning culture.
Yeah.
I'll give one example of this. Christy, we've told the story here on the podcast before that when we were in seminary, you and Paul came to our church and you were actually the first woman to preach at that church. So this is 15 years ago. I was all for like women preaching, women in ministry. But I had so many blind spots to my misogyny, to sort of insidious kind of latent patriarchy, to habits of how I showed up as a man in the world that inhibited women from really showing up and being women in spaces I was in. And I remember finding that out by like women like getting upset with me or telling me, or even some guys calling me out. And my immediate response to all that is, that can't be true because I support women in ministry. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And so I think it's even, so if you tell a pastor they have to learn about quantum physics, most pastors will be like, yeah, I don't know anything about that. But when it's about something that they feel competent in or they feel educated in, that's a particularly difficult place because we feel like we have figured it out. We feel like we do have something to offer. So learning to have a healthy leadership culture is learning that even in your places of competency, where you feel like you have strong convictions, that you have learning to be teachable there.
Yeah. I think one example that comes to mind for me is even in the situation that we referenced earlier, in the process that our church went through of, leaving our denomination, none of us had really led a process of that kind of, magnitude of change. Mm-hmm. And so we did a couple things during that process that were new. One was like we hired a couple times, like just some coaches, some leadership coaches that we trusted to basically just say, hey, this is our best, efforts at what we think might be helpful here. Like, can you shoot holes in this and help us understand, where we might be, tripping over our own feet here and help us understand what makes for a good process here. And I just remember thinking, like Gravity Leadership was started. And one of the things we do is like consult and coach mm-hmm. leaders, and so there was a little bit of, it's only mild, but it was like a mild, like humbling to be like, okay, well, I know I coach other leaders, but I actually need some coaching here. I need some help, I'm doing this. And we actually, the other example is that during the process, we actually adjusted the way that we did it while we were doing it because we learned as we were going like, oh, this is what people are saying they need from us. And that's different than what we thought they would need. And so mm-hmm. let's make some adjustments and let's, move ahead here and let's put the brakes on here and let's, have lunch meetings. And, so there was a lot of conversation that had to be had to just even learn, hey, how is this impacting you and what do you need? And I remember several conversations where I admitted, that I was wrong about something and said, okay, well, this is my best shot before. I'm hearing you say the X, Y, and Z. And so I guess we need to do this a little bit differently. And so, so we'll make some adjustments, back to the drawing board and we'll learn as we go here. And I think that was a helpful way to walk through that, but again, a bit humbling.
Which tells me that your relationship with failure is like you're friends with failure, not in like a a bad way, but I mean, you're okay to fail and learn from it. And I think especially within faith communities, failure is considered like the worst possible thing. You can't fail. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so if we could just kind of admit, hey, this is where I'm growing. This is where I failed. This is what I'm learning.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that type of environment is really welcomed and yet is very healthy.
Yeah.
I
think there are some failures that are disqualifying, but I think the culture that we oftentimes feel stuck in is a culture where every failure is disqualifying. So I can't admit that I did something wrong because it sort of calls into question my whole calling, you know, like, can I even do this job? You know? I think that's healthy.
Yeah. This is one of the costs of an expert culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is that we can't fail or be wrong. And if we can't fail or be wrong, we can't learn. And so again, this isn't to valorize failure, right? There's things I could do, failures I could make that would be tragic and awful, not just for me as a pastor, but for me as a human, right? But leading a discernment process, leave a denomination and having to learn from other people how to do that well. And in the moment saying, even to like our leadership team and our vestry, when it's all done, hey, I did X, Y, and Z, and I wouldn't do those again, right? And even as I said that, there were people on the leadership team that disagreed with me. They thought I should do it again. Again, that's okay.
Yeah. No, that was helpful,
Right, if you're in a conflict with somebody and the person on the other side of the table, you ask them, hey, what would you do differently? And their answer is nothing. I would do nothing differently in this conflict. My guess is, man, they're unable to have a kairos in that moment. Then they're not able to actually look inside and see what's going on in them. Not because I think it's all their fault, but because conflict involves two people, right? Or two parties. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that's the fifth one, Christy. You've anticipated our fifth.
Great segue.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's
why you're paying me the big
a pro.
Bucks.
Mm-hmm. Pink headphones and a pink hat.
Just kidding. I don't get paid for this, just so you know.
Neither do we. Nobody gets paid.
No.
I think we talked about the unhealthy or toxic leadership cultures that conflict is mishandled. We don't know what to do with it, how to handle it. And I think that in places that have more health, that conflict is handled in a better way. There's a lot of ways to talk about this. And in fact, I think this is so important and we need so much work here that I think we're going to start a series on what does it mean to be trauma-informed? Because as I think about the mistakes I've made within conflict, it's been two major reasons. One, I wasn't aware when my trauma came online and hijacked my best self. And two, I wasn't aware when other people's trauma came online. And I didn't realize that it was an opportunity to care for them because I was too, I was ignorant about how trauma works, but I was also too engrossed or wrapped up in this argument or a disagreement we're having and having to win that.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a lot to learn out there. And
yes, there is.
I agree with that, Matt. And I think specifically this trauma, like understanding how trauma comes online, how it works in to sabotage our best attempts at conflict resolution. It's one of the most helpful pieces of learning that I am sort of actively undergoing right now. It has been so helpful. Just I feel like I can't overstate it. How helpful it's been to understand that, how it feels when trauma comes online. And again, when we say traumas here, it's small T traumas. It's not like everybody's, you know, has been through war or some really traumatic event, but you know, little things that can, from our past, that can come online in our bodies in the present, in situations that really have nothing to do with the past, but we think, you know, our bodies are convinced that that past situation is now happening again. And we react as if it's happening. And we have to, there's no way forward until you go a little bit backwards and get back into your prefrontal cortex and do some breathing. And you have to sort of get out of that phase. And I'm the same as you, Matt. I think a lot of the mistakes I've made, not just in ministry and in leadership, but in my marriage. And
yes, and my I was kids, thinking the same you thing. Know, you've made so many mistakes in your marriage like this. No, yes, family life.
I'm finally admitting it.
I'm affirming
but
this.
But yeah, family life, these are the people we talk with most often. And just those failures basically were like a lack of awareness of what's happening in my body, in somebody else's body, and just the ability to like, hey, let's get to a different space so that we can really work through this. So anyway, it's been super helpful.
Yeah.
I was actually in a conversation, my husband and I were in a conversation with another couple recently, and I recognized my own trauma come into the surface as this couple was like asking us advice on something that was really sensitive and in a topic that involved my own past history. And at one point I like everything in me wanted to just like scream and be like, you all are crazy. You know, like, I don't know. I just had lots of things to say. And I like looked at Paul and like made these like, I don't know, eyes of like, help me, you know? And he kind of, I mean, he obviously, we know each other. He looked at me and could tell like, okay, it's not time for Christy to talk at this moment. And so he kind of helped ask questions to this couple where I could kind of sit there for a few minutes and take some deep breaths, put my feet on the floor, like, you know, like all these things that my counselors helped me do and, you know, as different rhythms and tools to help me in this, to then be able to finish the conversation and then, you know, enter back in. And, but that thing that took me like, I don't know, 10 minutes and my husband to help me in took me like 18 months to actually learn all of that stuff and then actually implement it into conversations. Mm-hmm. So when I say there's a lot to learn, I just feel like there's a lot out there that we got to keep on learning and practicing in our own lives. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's good.
Yeah. One of the things that we can end with this. One of the things we train leaders to do and Christians to do is learn how to notice Kairos moments, in particular Kairos moments where there's a lot at stake or something is under threat, right? Or we have a promise of something we don't have. So those two kind of heighten the stakes and create conflict. And we train people on how to notice the things that God and Jesus deal with in Scripture, which is the human's need for significance, belonging, and security. And those three things are created needs for humans. And when we either are seeking them because we don't have them, or we have them and we're going to lose them, that's when all hell breaks loose. That's when conflict really ramps up. So if we can become the kinds of people who notice when those things are happening, we have a much greater chance of not wounding and hurting and hiding and doing all the manner of junk we do in conflict. We actually are much more likely to stay present, stay calm, stay aware, take care of ourselves, take care of the person we disagree with, and move through it together, right? And maybe even experience the kingdom of God.
Well, when you put it that way, it seems like it's a good thing.
So yeah, and actually the goal then of a healthy leadership isn't to avoid conflict.
No.
It's to enter into it in a holy way. To learn the things that make for peace, not just know the things to keep the peace.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yep.
That's quotable.
Okay.
I'm going to use that later.
Yep. Write it down.
So anyway, listener, really grateful for your thoughtful and heartfelt engagement.
Thank you.
You know, I had to actually take a break from reading some of your emails because you communicated so clearly the angst and the pain and the difficulty that toxic leadership environments have created for you and your families. And so thanks for sharing that with us. You're not alone. Yeah. And it also spurred us on to create this additional podcast where we don't just name what's wrong, but like Christy narrated earlier on, proclaim good things that we can live into and even look for. you know, as we seek to put down roots and commit to people in local congregations. So thanks, listener.
Let's keep the dialogue going if you'd like. If you've got time and inclination, email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. We read all the emails that come through and look forward to interacting with you and hearing kind of from your side of this conversation. It's kind of a podcasts are weird, right? It's kind of a conversation, but it feels one-sided sometimes. And so it's often very, very helpful to hear from you as to how things are impacting you and ways that you're responding. So anyway, feel free to email us.
Or visit. You can always go to Colorado Springs. With the listener last week, friends.
Did you?
So somebody took me up on it.
Christy is not she's not just pretending to be nice. Like she is genuinely hospitable and will have coffee with you. So, and she might even she's wearing a hat today, dear listener, that says, smile, you matter. It's a pink hat.
That's right.
Maybe she'll even wear that and bless you if you come and visit.
That's right.
Ben, I want you to know as you were talking that I had time and inclination and did send podcast@gravityleadership.com an email.
Just to see if it works?
Well, no, I realized I wanted to do it and I had time.
I wanted to do it? Okay. Yeah, good. All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
What's good for the gander, I guess, you know? I'm asking other people to do it, so I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I just got it. Yep. It's good. It's working. Listener, it works. Right. The podcast email address works. Time. So we are being silly. All right. Peace, y'all.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, we'd love it if you tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Joining our Gravity community is free. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our show is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebby. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast, and you can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Record button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.